Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, you and I talked a little bit before the show about how last night I couldn't get myself to get angry. It was not I thought I would be a lot more angry about the Lakers season just kind of officially ending, but we've seen this coming. Like, anybody in the at least in the back of their minds knew that this kind of thing was possible this year.
It's funny, the most irritated I was during the game last night was in the first quarter when they were up by 8, because I was just like, why can't UMFers play like this against bad teams? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I even tweeted, like, I'm stuck in this, I'm mad at the Lakers no matter what loop, where when they play well against good teams, I'm irritated they don't play well against bad teams and actually win games like Phoenix and Atlanta and Memphis and New Orleans. They've had so many. Cleveland, New York, we could keep going. It's crazy how many we can do. And then when they play like crap against anyone, I'm irritated. Right. Yeah. So there's like very little that they can do to not piss me off right now. And so, like, once they started sucking again, I was like,
oh, yeah,
that's what I expected. All right. At least you're staying on brand, you MFers.
It's like, you know, as somebody who has been married and with my significant other for 15 years, I totally know that vibe. Where, like, even when I put my clothes away in my hamper the way I should be, it's like, why don't you do it all the time? You know?
Yes.
I totally understand what was going on there. Today's show, though, what we're going to do. The conversation that everybody is having right now is, who is the most to blame? Who looks the worst? Who has the most egg on their face, right? We've been doing that all season long.
Yeah.
We've done anybody who is just now having that conversation should maybe, you know, they should have been having this conversation before this. These aren't new problems. What we are going to do, though, at least to start the show, is look at people who, if they don't come out looking better, because I don't think anybody necessarily does, but who comes out of this with the least amount of egg on their face? Who comes out of this looking relatively okay, right? Because there are very few people who do, but, you know, that's why it's going to be a short first segment. And then in the second and third segments, what we're going to do is we're going to look ahead to the remaining 18 games that the Lakers have here. And we're going to, there are two directions I think that this season can go in. Either the Lakers go completely into the tank and focus on improving their draft status heading into June's draft and the lottery and all those things. And we go right back to the Team Tank podcast if we want. Or the Lakers try to end on some type of a positive. They try to build some momentum heading into an offseason in which they have a ton of questions to answer. So we're going to talk about the pluses and minuses to each of those directions. And then finally, at the very end of the show, we'll discuss which of those two directions we think the Lakers should go in. Let's start, though, like I said, with this idea of who walks away from this looking the best, while noting that nobody comes out of this looking better than they did heading into it.
The only person that I'm like, yeah, that's a dude I want to roll with
is Ingram.
And I was really disappointed that he didn't play in the game against the Clippers. That was, I mean, the players in the organization, they are supposed to be the last ones to, like, give up on a season. And I have no idea what the extent of Brandon's shoulder injury was. I would have liked to see him play if he could. And I do not know the circumstances around it. I'm just saying that, like, if you got to play through something, that's the game to do it on.
Unless they really just surprised he didn't.
Because it kind of came out of nowhere, right? It's not like there was something that happened in a game. But that said, the benefit of the doubt, which is a concept I've been thinking a ton on lately that we'll get more into in future shows with as it pertains to the Lakers, Brandon has earned my benefit of the doubt. And I think that that adversity reveals the truth of people and how Brandon handled all of this. It's not just that he played well. It was the, like, I'm going to go for this as best as I can. I think the one thing with Brandon's brilliant play up to last game when he didn't play, that I was a little bothered by, because we've rightly given him a lot of praise, is that his passing hasn't been very good for a guy who touches the ball as much as he does. He doesn't have a lot of, like, spot up possessions. So there are a lot of times where his missed shots are over two guys and the better play is to kick it out to the open guy, right? But how Brandon has handled this adversity, I've been really impressed by. The other player who, and the other person in the organization in total that fits that to me is Josh Hart, even though he's hasn't shot the ball well at all. And that's an understatement, right? Like, just focusing on Josh, like, that dude cares. He's trying. He's giving everything that he has.
I really liked his comments after the game last night.
What were they? I didn't catch those.
So he was basically like, we are the most criticized team in the NBA. If you can't get up to play for that, and if you can't get up to play for this organization on a nightly basis, then what are we doing here?
Yeah, and he's absolutely right. And so, like, for me, the two guys who are like, the application of all of this and why this matters is that if the Lakers are able to salvage this and get a second star and build to the point where they're capable of contending for titles, things get hard in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Things are not going to go your way. And who's going to be able to stay being who they are in the toughest of times? And Brandon Ingram and Josh Hart were the two guys in this whole organization, really, that have shown me that they are made of that. How about you?
I was wondering why Lonzo isn't on this.
He's kind of an incomplete, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because of him being out. He was playing so well before the injury, and I think that his absence kind of, it's not all on Lonzo, but it does demonstrate how much of the life force and energy and just give a crap that he plays with. Mm-hmm. That said, he was not actually on the court to play through this adversity. So I can't praise him when he was on the sidelines, even if it's not his fault.
Yeah, I don't know if I would necessarily, I definitely wouldn't, you know, praise him for it. But I do think of the people involved in this. Like, if you're Lonzo's camp, right, and LeBron comes back and the Lakers still look so listless in your absence, I would probably, mm-hmm. I'd use that to sell myself a little bit.
Bro, I follow Harrison Gaines, who's Lonzo's agent, and he tweeted basically the same, like, I hope this stretch shows, you know, how valuable Lonzo is. And his job is to talk up his client, but I mean, but
still.
He's not wrong.
Yeah.
You know, he's not wrong at all.
And that's what I mean here is I think Lonzo perfectly encapsulates kind of what we're talking about here in that, you know, Lonzo's injury obviously is a negative. It's a net negative to get hurt and miss a bunch of time, right? I'm not even positive. I just wrote for Silver Screen and Roll, and I've been saying this now for a few weeks. I'm not positive we see Lonzo Ball again this year, right? We might be heading towards a place where the Lakers, you know, let alone will he come back within the time frame of the 8 to 12 weeks that usually is associated with a grade 3 ankle sprain, but he definitely isn't coming back to try to turn around a season. That's not happening.
Yeah, no, that ship has sailed. I'll give more thoughts on this later, but I do think there's value in him coming back.
Agree.
I just think it's more appropriate for the next segment.
I agree. But this is kind of what I mean in having this conversation versus just pointing and associating blame with everybody is, like, there are people here who did not have, I think, the ideal season. Nobody here had the ideal season, even the people that you talked about, right? Josh Hart spent, like, all of 2019 to this point unable to hit three-pointers.
Right.
Brandon Ingram started the season, and we were legitimately wondering if he fits with the starting lineup, right? Nobody had the type of season we would hope for, but there are people who, despite not having that season, still look better than some of the people around them.
Yeah, with Josh and Brandon, it's more for me a what are you made of? Like, all those things, like, Josh still has to be able to make a shot, right? Mm-hmm. Brandon still needs to be able to drive and kick to the open man instead of shooting over two people or, you know, any of the other flaws with either of their game. What I'm saying is I will get behind a guy who shows that they can push through the hardest of times and believe in them that they will eventually figure that out and they will be there when it counts and when it matters the most. That was the most revealing part of these very tough times to be a Laker fan.
Yeah, it's that scene in every single movie where the protagonist is sitting there feeling sorry for themselves and somebody in the background steps up and slaps them across the face and says, snap out of it. We actually still have to produce here.
Yeah.
I thought that was Ingram and Hart, and they deserve a ton of credit for doing that.
Yeah.
What we're going to do, we're going to take a quick second, and when we come back, we are going to talk about the topic I said last night and today in today's show that I was not ready to talk about last night, and I'm still not positive I am, but when we come back, we're going to talk about the benefits, I guess, of just closing up shop and getting the best planning for the future as best they can, given the way that the season has gone. It's going to be great. I can't wait. This will probably be a shorter segment. Are you pro tanking on this? I still find myself, it is probably the more logical thing to do. It is probably the more practical thing to do. But for me personally, I don't see it.
Yeah, I actually think it's a bad idea. And I do understand the practicality, but only on a surface level. I think part of this season and part of the there's a broader conversation to be had about the culture of the Lakers organization. Uh-huh. And one of the things that I think come with tanking is a lack of that resilience, right? That when things get hard, your first inclination is to fold up and pack things up because that's what you've done in the past.
And explain that choice with practicality.
Right. And be like, oh, well, this is the right thing. Like, the young Lakers aren't going to be in the playoffs this year, and they aren't going to get that experience. And that's really unfortunate. Them being able to push through and fight through this time and find a way to compete during these times when it's bad, it's not the same as being in the playoffs by any means, but being able to push through is really valuable, and not just fold up when things get difficult and when things get dire. One of the things I loved about Kobe, and we've made like Mamba mentality a meme and all of that, is that like it took Kobe a very long time to fold up and pack up shop. Mm-hmm. He would more often than not, and he does have examples in his career where he did not go follow through all the way. But the vast majority of the time, probably more than anybody, he was going to keep coming after you like the killer at the end of a horror movie who just won't die, mm-hmm. you know, and he might not win. He might be the horror movie where the good guys win. Right. Yeah. But Kobe was going to keep coming after you. And I think that, especially in young players, is extremely important. And I think it's really important to not give up on this season. If we were talking about the difference between, you know, like a first pick in the draft or the fourth pick in the draft, that's one thing. In reality, we're probably talking about the difference between the eighth pick and the 13th pick. And that's not enough value to override the importance of learning how to develop resilience.
Yeah, I wrote a little bit about this in summarizing the latest quote-unquote update on Lonzo, in which Mike Trudell grabbed video of Lonzo shooting, and he still is barely getting off the ground for those shots, right? And I know that a lot of people are going to jump to that. Well, why don't we just tank anyway? And my thing, I agree with everything that you said there, and I think it's really important to point this out. The league changed the way that the odds are doled out in this. Like they flatten these odds. So the idea of, you know, in years past, and then the other thing too is there's no scenario here where the Lakers lose their pick. Like in years past, the reason tanking right. was such a big deal Great back point. Then was that there was a chance the Lakers were gonna lose their pick if they didn't land within the top three.
Right. Top three or not. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And the other thing too that's been pointed out by other people who are much smarter than me in this aspect of basketball coverage is this draft isn't as deep or isn't as good as years past have been, where you had to get to a certain point, you know, you had to get to top seven or you had to get to top five because that's where the gap between tier one or tier two or tier three becomes really stark and there's a drop off there. From what I'm hearing, it's pretty gradual and there's, you know, outside of Zion, it's basically Zion and everybody else, and there are arguments to be made for everybody else, but or for a couple other people at the very top of the list. But you know, when you're talking about, like you said, 13 compared to 8, and given the abilities of the Lakers scouting department, it's fine. You just kind of, to me, there are very few actual practical reasons for tanking here. And the point of this was to just show how few there are.
Yeah. And I'm not a draft expert by any stretch of the imagination. It's just that in most drafts that
I openly difference between loathe the NCAA. I hate watching that stuff.
Yeah, no. I can relate for sure. So, it's just not enough of a difference in most drafts. You know, it's easy to get kind of caught up in this draft, and I'm as guilty of it as anyone, of getting like, I've got my guys that I like, right? Mm-hmm. But when you look back at it historically, like the difference between the eighth pick and the 13th pick is just it's just not that much. You know, you're not in the place where you're drafting a surefire star. And if you can get a really good player, and you'll get all stars at that point from time to time, you know, but it's just not enough to justify. The Lakers are so lacking in culture, man. Like I said, I want to get into it more on a different show, but it's just so apparent on so many levels that to me, the culture of the team is that takes precedent over the 8th pick versus 13.
Yeah, that's absolutely paramount. We are going to take a quick second, and when we come back, I want to talk about the ways that the Lakers can generate momentum heading into the offseason, because I still think there are a couple. They involve guys getting and staying healthy first and foremost, so that's where we'll start. But I think there are reasons, even if the Lakers aren't going to make the playoffs, and even if I think right now they have less than like 0.5% chance of squeezing in, they're all but officially eliminated, but there are still things I believe to actually play for here. And they have a lot to do with the culture stuff that you alluded to a second ago. So hang tight. All right, so as we said in the last segment, tanking to me, I don't want to affiliate myself with that at this point. We've gone down that path. I don't really want to. But I do believe there are things for the Lakers to play for here. If Lonzo, now, man, this is tough to phrase because it's highly speculative, but with most grade 3 ankle sprains, surgery is almost always involved at some point or another. Even if they, in cases where it isn't involved, and this is just, I'm relaying stuff that my wife and I talked about, but even in those cases where surgery isn't involved and it's avoided, a lot of times it comes back to that at some point or another over the years to come, because that grade 3 ankle sprain can be so disastrous for the not just the ankle but the entire surrounding area. We saw last season Lonzo put off surgery as long as he possibly could, and then he wound up needing it anyway, and it impacted the beginning of his season this year, right? The Lakers have to avoid that. I think that's where to me, this entire offseason has kind of sort of already started. They need to look long and hard at this, and they need to have a legitimate conversation with Lonzo and his camp to say, all right, do you think for sure that you can avoid surgery and not need it come July or August or whatever to where it impacts September and October? And for me, that to me is the at the very top of the list of my priorities moving into this offseason.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I, as much as I think that, you know, criticisms levied on the Lakers in this respect are warranted, it's also on Lonzo, right? That is in part a player's decision to go under the knife or not. A lot, you know, in last summer, he was given the choice to go under the knife or try to pursue non-surgical options. And he did that first, which a lot of people do. And then that didn't work. And then he ended up having to have surgery. So it's Lonzo needs to come out of this not only to be able to be ready for September and October, which he wasn't for this past season, but to be able to have an off season where he can work on his game in a way that he hasn't been able to in either of the last two seasons. This past off season was obvious, but even his rookie year at the end of summer league, he had issues with his knee or his ankle or something like that that really prevented him from getting a lot of work done. Like Lonzo is brilliant in a lot of ways that you can't teach. But he needs to learn the stuff that you can teach, and he can't do that without the reps necessary over the summer, the timetable to work on that over the course of the season when your body is beat up from playing 82 games, not like Lonzo's played 82 games, but from the schedule of playing every other night for the most part, like you just don't have time to get the real player development work in the way that you can over the summer. And he needs a summer. He needs a healthy summer. So whatever he has to do to be able to get there, he needs to do.
Yeah. And so if they have that conversation and the doctors and his camp and Lonzo himself, they all agree that surgery is not going to be necessary now or in the short term future, and those involved think that he is capable of coming back. If he is 100% healthy, I would, as you said earlier, I would really like to see him back for all kinds of reasons, right? We still have yet to really see the Lakers at full health, and getting them to something close to that would be a nice way to just kind of show everybody that, yeah, we were actually capable of something. That wasn't just a hot start to the season.
Bro, Lonzo, LeBron, and Brandon have played in, I think, 23 games this season.
Unreal, yeah.
And it's so frustrating, right? They haven't all played together since Christmas, right? And, you know, Brandon got undercut by LaMarcus Aldridge earlier in the season, missed a little bit of time, got the suspension for punching Chris Paul. So, like, just seeing those three guys on the court together, you know, when Lonzo and LeBron play, they're 20-14. Mm-hmm. And then when at least one of them miss a game, they're 10-19 or 10-20, something like that. Like, it's a massive difference. And LeBron spoke to it a little bit last night about the injuries that the Lakers have had this year. And, you know, part of that's bad luck. Part of it's also, I don't know, man, like, I don't have faith in the training staff, but I don't have the training to give them the specific criticisms.
Yeah.
It's just like, it doesn't feel right. And that's about the extent to which I can criticize them. Like, it feels like it could be better than
this. It's like getting angry at your mechanic when your car breaks
down. Right. It's like, you know? I don't know exactly what you didn't do right, but I'm pretty sure this isn't right. Yeah. That's a great analogy. Yeah.
Yeah. I the way I phrased it last night in talking to Harrison was, you know, I think if the Lakers training staff was actually as good as the one that we think that the Lakers should have, we'd hear a lot more about them.
I mean, doesn't that apply to most of the organization?
Right, yeah. Like, no, absolutely.
How many people, like, in their current job would be hired by another NBA organization to do that same job?
Yeah, no, I mean, you and I are going to talk, you know, at length as we get into the offseason and as we prepare more of that conversation. But in terms of this aspect of it, where it feels like, and it doesn't just feel like it, it literally, the case is literally that the Lakers have very rarely had their full team at their disposal. Like, it's fair to wonder if we would have heard more about the training staff and the medical staff and stuff like that. And the fact that we haven't heard very much about them, even before guys were getting healthy, like, that to me, you know, it feels like a red flag. But anywho, getting back to the topic at hand here regarding, you know, finishing on some type of momentum, is there anything specifically that you're hoping to see from the last 18 games? Is there anything, like, for example, I'm going to keep an eye out for selfish play. You know, mm-hmm. I'm going to keep an eye out for guys whose contracts are up, doing things that serve them but not the team. You know, because those are the guys who I already have an idea of guys who I don't really want back. But if we see a bunch of this and we see that trend pop up over and over and over again, then it's for sure like, all right, see you later, KCP. Good riddance at the end of this year.
I want them to play Mo Wagner. I want mm-hmm. them to play Alex Caruso. I want them to play Jonathan Williams. Mm-hmm. Maybe Bonga. Bonga is so raw that I'm fine with them not playing him. And I'd like them to sit guys like Rondo and KCP and JaVale and guys who aren't competing. I want to see them compete. Yeah. To answer your question in a very plain English, over the last 18 games, I want to see them compete. And I think that those guys that I mentioned, those veterans, have quit. And I think that, you know, maybe at some point in their career, they were competitors in champ. That's how they were built, right? These guys, mm-hmm. Tough guys who are competitors that are, there was a downside to that too, that when things got hard and didn't go the way that they wanted to, and, you know, everyone envisioned the Lakers getting into the playoffs and giving teams a run for their money in a 7-game series. The downside to that is that when it didn't go that way, those dudes quit.
Yeah.
I can't put it any plainer English. I trust Jonathan Williams, Mo Wagner, Alex Caruso to not quit. And those dudes, those vets that we signed, they better be gone next year, right? And so if we're talking about, like, the value of what that can be accomplished in the last 18 games is the culture that's built from now until the end of the season. You don't have a ton of time to make a lot of great progress, but you cannot do that with dudes who have quit staying on the court. And those three guys in particular, Rondo, JaVale, and KCP, are the guys that to me have quit the most, and you can't have them on the court in order to accomplish momentum for the next season.
Yeah, KCP especially to me was, now, you know, Rondo, people are going to point to Rondo's statistical production last night in the game against the Clippers, and in that manner, yeah, he produced. He deserves credit for producing in the way that he did. But there are also plays where you just watch defensively and you're just like,
it's not about production, it's about competing.
Could you try to care? Like, could you compete. Just compete? Yeah, could you
compete?
Could you just show me that you care a little bit? There was a play last night where Rondo, Harrison and I, we watch games together maybe about once a week, once every other week or so. And Harrison was reading or paying attention to the side or doing whatever he had to be doing. And I just screamed out, "Help, Rondo, Rondo, help, help." And Harrison's like, "What the hell is wrong with you?" And I'm like, "Just watch how this is going to go." And some dude creeps right behind. Rondo tells Bullock to go double team across the key. Some dude just kind of, I think it was Gilgeous Alexander, just kind of sneaks in behind Rondo. Rondo pays no attention whatsoever after telling Bullock to leave his guy, pays no attention to the guy that Bullock just left. And then the attempt at contesting the shot was akin to the way that, you know, you reach for a remote, you know, when you're like stuck
that,
in the,
that level of intensity, yeah, right?
The way, when you're like stuck in the couch and you just like, "Oh, come on up." Nope, I'm not going to get it. You know, I guess I'll watch this show a little bit longer. That's it. And that's all I want to see. I want to see, like you said, compete in that case. If you send Bullock across the key to go double team, maybe note where his guy that he's guarding is standing. And then if that guy sneaks behind you, try a little bit harder than me, like trying to grab a Snickers off of the opposite counter, you know?
Right. Like, it's all well and good that Rondo knows the plays that the other team is running, but you have to physically do it in order for it to have value. You have to physically compete and try in order for it to have value. It's not just Rondo, but
that's just the example I could think of right now.
Yeah. And so just where I'm at, I don't want to see those dudes on the court anymore. If we're not playing for a playoff spot, and we're not anymore, like, get those dudes off the court and get out. Like, I want to watch a team that I respect going forward.
The nice thing, if JaVale McGee stops playing, is we get to stop watching JaVale McGee post-ups. That'll be nice. That'll be great. I can't wait to have those out of my life. I agree completely with everything that you said, and I would add to that that not only is it a matter of showing those guys who quit that you don't quit on the Lakers, but you also reward those who you know aren't going to quit or haven't quit, right? Even if Josh Hart shoots one for his next 30 from three, you're not winning anyway. I know he's going to compete on the other end of the court. Preferably, he doesn't shoot one for 30 from three, but you're still rewarding him for the idea of buying into the culture that is the Lakers. And this is one thing that I talked about last night, and I've talked about this a ton. To me, Lakers exceptionalism at its worst is when you believe that people are going to behave differently than they have over years of existing because they are now Lakers.
Right.
Without doing anything to reward those who actually do behave the way that you want them to, or without sending signs or sending messages to those who don't behave that way that you need them to. The Lakers need to start building this from the inside out, and what we're seeing right now is those on the margins who they hoped would just buy into Lakers culture and didn't. You need to cut those cysts away.
You know, part of, I think, the problem with this and why we might not see this over the last 18 games, although I hope we do, is I'm not sure that Luke isn't checked out either. We've talked a lot about how Luke has been under fire and there's a lot of factors working against him. I don't think Luke is giving his best right now. I don't think he's competing to the level that he's capable of competing of. I don't think that like, there's no way Luke is too smart to not see this. And he knows like an NBA locker room and what a championship caliber team, a contender, feels like, like way better than I do. And there's no way he doesn't see the BS too. And I'm disappointed that he hasn't been like, man, screw you guys. Like,
yeah,
if you're not competing, like, it's the difference between like principle and looking out for yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you're a person, if you have a principle that you value above any, so like competing, right? Like, that's mm-hmm. a good thing for a coach to have, is like, I don't give a damn who you are. If you're Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, mm-hmm. or Alex Caruso, right? You are going to compete. If you do not compete, however important you are, however legendary your status is, I am going to call you out for not competing because I value that above everything else. Mm-hmm. And I'm just not entirely sure that Luke doesn't kind of have two middle fingers in the air and hasn't had it, like, you know, for a little while now, where yeah. he's just like, man, screw you guys. This is what you deserve. Even if he's a big part of the problem, right?
You know what speaks to a lot of what you're talking about? His post-game quotes. I think he's on 4 games in a row now where he said he was happy with the way that the Lakers competed.
It's like, if you view it through a different lens, like, that dude's trolling us.
Yeah.
Or if not us, he's trolling the Lakers organization.
Yeah.
Right? Because he knows he's gone, right?
Yeah, he's probably known for months.
Yeah. So if you're in Luke's shoes and it's all falling apart, right, you might kind of have two middle fingers in the air too.
Yeah. Well, I've said this for a minute now, where Luke was given a raw deal, and I think for a while there, he did legitimately try to make the best of a raw deal. And then it was a lost cause, I think. And at this point, with it being a lost cause and him knowing that it's a raw deal, that combination of those two things, yeah, I could totally see him, A, checking out, and B, I can't quite blame him either, because it's been such a, because it was a, on top of it being a raw deal and being a lost cause, there was no scenario here where I think he could seriously look himself in the mirror and say, I'm sticking around here long term. And I just yeah. don't know. I don't know how. And again, it goes back to what we talked about a second ago with rewarding those who actually still buy into those principles that you need, culturally speaking, to be a properly run organization. And for a while there, Luke did try to make the best of a bad situation. 10 games into the season, he was berated for his abilities to do so. I would have started to check out right there and then.
See, I want to make a distinction between understanding why Luke feels that way and accepting it. I don't accept Luke not competing. You know,
that's
like
a good point.
Like, I get why he might be feeling that way, but like, one of the things I loved about Josh Hart yesterday is that was Josh Hart showing the world, this is who I am.
Yeah.
Like, this, I might not be
down
playing,
Lou Williams on that, right, on that fast break.
Like, when you truly believe in something, your coach not being good or the outside circumstances being toxic or whatever, that doesn't matter. It's truly who you are. You are going to fight. You're going to scrap. You're going to grind because it's who you are, and nobody else can change you in that way. Mm-hmm. So Luke being handed a very raw deal, I can recognize that and why that would push you toward that. But it's still not acceptable for me, for a guy like that, to check out, even if I understand why he would, if that makes sense.
That's a great point. I completely agree. In terms of anything else that you're looking forward, moving forward as this season comes to a close, I think we pretty much touched on it as best we possibly can. I think there's still reason to watch. I think there's still reason for us to, we may not be as invested into this team as we once were, for good reason. Again, I understand why some fans have checked out on this season. But I still think there's plenty of reason to tune in and watch this, because it's when an organization is at its lowest that you figure out what they're made of. Right now is where we find out, okay, this is where the Lakers actually get kicked in the nuts, and instead of looking around to find out who it was, they guard themselves moving forward to make sure that doesn't happen ever again. And that's what I'm looking for the most. I want to see accountability on the part of the front office. I want to see accountability on the part of Jeannie Buss. Like, these are things that at some point I need to start seeing the actual cultural shift that leads to identifying how best to build that culture.
Let's do a show on this in the near future, man, where, like, what adjustments need to be made in order for the Lakers to, you know, like, if nothing else, if there's no other value from these last 18 games, and not even 18 games, this season going the way it goes, is that if this is not the necessary catalyst for some changes to be made in the mentality of the decision makers of the Lakers, then nothing is going to be.
Yes.
So, you know, like, it was not, there's no mincing words. This was an organizational failure from top to bottom. And I almost think that if there is going to be a change in mentality, that's almost what had to happen in order for them to look at this a little differently.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, to the point that you made, or what makes me a little nervous here, was that there was an opportunity for those involved to take accountability. And Jeannie decided to go the fake news route. You know, that makes me nervous, yeah, man. That makes me
let's
really
do a show on this,
nervous.
That needs to be discussed and not in passing at the end of a show. Let's do a show on this.
All right. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Again, I still think there's reason to tune in to the rest of the season. There's 18 games left. We've made it this far. We may as well continue to at least show who we are. As Pete said, Josh Hart did. So we'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. And yeah, I guess go Lakers? That sounds weird.